Christmas time is a time of cheer, of sugar plums and fairies. It's a time stuffed to the brim with cookies, eggnog, heartwarming tales, dreams, wonder, and some of the catchiest tunes. As children, Christmas was so exciting that we gun kids would all come down with terrible stomach bugs the day of. Yes, Christmas is the joy that kills.
It's like a gun to the stomach.
Again, a very apt comparison. However, while we tend to only focus on the fun and sweet of the holiday, there is more to it than gingerbread houses and jolly fat gift givers. After all, the sugar plum fairy only appears because of the nutcracker's fight with the giant rat king. We return home for the holidays to remind ourselves how stressful family time can be. And I need only turn to my bookshelf to find the high school yearbooks that have the uncanny ability of filling me with the self-loathing I had as a teen. That is not to say that Christmas isn't a joyous time of togetherness. It is. It's just also tainted by the sharp taste of late-stage capitalism and the pressure to achieve perfection through cozy moments filled with holiday cheer. In other words, Christmas is sweet, but it is also scary and confusing. Welcome to Not So Familiar History. I'm Helen Gunn.
And I'm David Cirillo.
David is the sweetest, so he's getting us started with some sweet moments to remind us that Christmas is indeed a lovely holiday.
Like Helen talked about, well, also that's not true, I'm not the sweetest, but anyway, like Helen talked about before, about how the Sugar Plum Fairy appears because of the Nutcracker's fight with the giant Rat King and all of her lovely allusions to the Nutcracker, we're going to pattern this episode a little bit after the Nutcracker. We're going to start sweetly, and then we're going to delve into some more sinister Christmas traditions. To start off, I'm going to talk a little bit about my childhood. Less full of stomach bugs, but exciting
Lucky
nonetheless.
You.
Although, actually, nowadays, I tend to get sick around Christmas, but not when I was younger.
It's lit.
My childhood was filled with a lot of excitement around Christmas. We had Santa, of course. My parents would actually trick us all. One of them always ran outside with the bells to make us believe the sleigh was approaching. And then my grandpa would come in all dressed up as Santa. I thought he would come out of the fireplace, but I guess he probably used the front door, unbeknownst to me.
A little safer, perhaps.
Perhaps. It was a big production, but Santa wasn't the only mythological gift-giving figure in my life. I'd also spend my holidays gathered with other children to hear about the wonders of La Befana. My grandfather, Santa himself, loved to push me headfirst into Italian culture, often to my chagrin, but he made the point to introduce me to this Christmas witch. Christmas witches, counterparts or alternatives to Santa, exist across the world. I am one of them. But
it explains so much.
Yeah, I'm one of the bad ones. Anyway, Christmas witches tend to be, especially in Slavic countries, not entirely magnanimous creatures. But in Italy, La Befana is. In the world of Christmas witches, she is Glinda the Good Witch, so to speak, although a lot older. Granted, I don't know how old Glinda is. She could just be like cloaking that.
So are we taking it from like the canon provided by the Wizard of Oz and we're just going to ignore Wicked?
Well, if I was talking about Wicked, I would talk about Glinda.
Oh, but she changes her name to Glinda halfway through.
Yeah, that is true. But I would have been more specific. I wouldn't say Glinda if I was talking about Wicked just because, you know, I like to be alternative. I would definitely
you
say
Glinda.
You make
the differentiation.
Yeah, I would definitely say Glinda. But
all right.
So this witch dates back to the birth of Christ. Picture it. Maybe Sicily, but definitely somewhere in the hills of Italy. An old woman named Befana spends her day sweeping and baking, very reminiscent of me during the entirety of the coronavirus pandemic. Honestly, it's been one of my only saving graces.
Your solace.
Yeah. Anyway.
Heck, those baguettes you make, they look incredible.
Yeah. Only eat them myself. Alone.
If only I could join you.
Yep. Amidst her pastoral life, Befana notices a bright light shining high in the sky. Pretty cool and shocking in a time without electricity, but also the stars were brighter then. So, she looks up and she thinks, hey, that's Figo. Cool stuff. I added the cool stuff. because
Figo, wait, so does Figo mean cool stuff
in Italian?
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, this is an educational podcast.
My polyglot friend.
Yes, because I clearly speak Italian from knowing like three, four, five words.
Good enough.
Yes. A few days later, a group of men do the impossible. Stop and ask for directions. It is because these men...
Sorry.
That was a delayed reaction.
I just understood it. That was a good one. Nice.
That was a delayed reaction.
I know. Whoops. Oh, that was good. It was good. All right. Do continue.
Well, it's because of these men, of all the men, were especially wise and knew when they were lost. The three wise men stop on Befana's hill and ask her for directions to Bethlehem. An odd ask to put upon an old woman in rural Italy when such long distance travel wasn't exactly the norm. But luckily for them, Befana was in the know. The men were so gracious that they invited Befana along for the ride, but she refused. She was busy and didn't want to travel to gawk at a random baby. I get it.
That's fair. I understand too. I can barely bear gawking at babies, I do know.
Yes. Or ones that happen to pass by me in strollers in the street that I gawk at to their parents' chagrin. Alas. As the men traveled, a difficult feat before Google Maps existed. Befana thought about her own child, who died years earlier. And
oh no.
Yeah, I know.
Wait, this is a sad story?
No.
But her child's dead.
Yeah, but we don't talk about that really beyond this.
Oh, we just ignore the fact that her child's dead?
This was a different time, Helen, okay? A lot of children died.
All right, fine.
Anyway, in an outburst of motherly love, she leapt up to pursue the child in Bethlehem and the men. She brought some of her yummy goodies along with her broom to help the new mother clean. Sadly, Befana, the supposed master of directions, got lost pretty quickly. Luckily, she had the second best thing after Google Maps. Angels. They appeared from the bright light she previously saw in the sky and gave her broom the magical power of flight. Word has it, this is also how Quidditch was invented.
Huh.
Mm-hmm.
Who would have thunk it?
Well, J.K. Rowling, she stole it from Befana.
Naturally.
Mm-hmm. Befana, despite her gift of flight, could not find the baby. She searched more and more through the night sky, and in fact, she still is searching. Every year on the eve of the Epiphany, Befana continues her search. She visits houses with a child present, dropping in just to see if there's that little child she sought from many, many moons ago. And even when it isn't Jesus, Befana is gracious enough to leave a gift, because in her eyes, every child is a gift, even if they aren't Jesus.
So, just like as a side, has anyone broken the news to her that Jesus was murdered?
That's not in my area of expertise, Helen.
So she's just traveling around for millennia looking for a man that died 32 years after his birth.
Also thinking that that man is still a baby. But
Befana, you've got some problemos.
Okay, Helen, well, she's a wonderful, sweet old woman who's trying to replace her dead child with a baby in the world by providing gifts to all the others, so lay off of her.
Okay, anyway, okay, I'm sorry, I'll back off.
So, even if these children aren't Jesus, she left them gifts. And she had them anyway, because she was going to give the gifts to Jesus, but the time, as since Helen alluded to, since passed, so why let the gifts go to waste? I'm not sure if it's simply a coincidence that La Befana's name actually comes from the Greek word epiphania, meaning epiphany, but maybe it was just meant to be, I guess.
Or perhaps coincidence doesn't exist.
Perhaps the angels were the ones who named her La Befana.
Yes.
Yes. When my grandfather was a child, growing up in war-torn southern Italy, Befana was the thing, a popular figure that was met with immense anticipation. Santa wasn't even in the picture, and gifts came on the Epiphany rather than on Christmas Day. Even so, many things remained the same. Stockings were hung with care and letters were written with wishes and dreams. Gifts weren't large, often handmade and filled with love. Granted, if kids were bad, they would get onions, garlic, or, yes, coal. And rather than milk, Afana was left wine. From wine to milk seems like a downgrade, but, you know, to each their own. Many in Italy have since gravitated towards the idea of Santa Claus, but Befana is still flying through the skies, undeterred by some fancy sleigh. Kids still know Befana as an old woman covered in a shawl with soot from household chimneys. She doesn't bring the big goods, that's for Santa, but Befana still brings all she can fit in her small sack, including the array of onions, garlic, and coal. Though to me, that simply sounds like an ideal cookout.
That was actually what I was thinking about as well. Like, they're in Italy, they, like, breathe garlic. This isn't a problem.
Yeah, vampires don't exist there. anyway, as global Christmas traditions have permeated the Italian bubble, Befana has some competition. But a lot of households simply celebrate both Saint Nick and the friendly elderly witch. Why not? You let one friendly old person down your chimney, why not another, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, why draw the line at one?
Exactly. It's like you quite literally let the gates open. Especially around this one time frame where it's very normalized.
I know. Except Santa comes on Christmas Day, right?
Yeah.
And Befana comes on the Epiphany. That's like 12 days after.
But Santa is the weird one here because all these Italian children celebrated the gift giving and the chimney invader on the Epiphany for years.
Yeah. So Santa's just like creepy. He comes early to try to surprise you.
Oh, God. Elsewhere, in Scandinavia to be specific, other Q traditions involve the Hidden Ones. I love the Hidden Ones, known as elves in Iceland. Helen also loves the Hidden Ones.
I love them merely because of Fire Saga.
Yes, the Eurovision movie. These elves can be good or bad, dictate fates, be playful, and are, of course, invisible. Around Christmas time, in Norway, Sweden, and Denmark, these Hidden Ones are more like gnomes. Called a tomt in Sweden or a nis in Norway and Denmark, these gnomes play tricks like their elven counterparts. They are small, sometimes have white beards, a woolen tunic, and a conical hat, much like you would picture in a front yard. They guard
homes. Did I tell you, when I was really little, we went to this place called Gnome Countryside, and it's run by this old guy that, like, has created this, like, wonderful woodland wonderland where he, like, wants little children to believe in gnomes. And so, like, that was adorable when we were kids. But naturally, when we grew up, I believe for my friend's 18th birthday, we went back to Gnome Countryside. And this old man tells us the reason why gnomes wear those pointy hats is so that should an acorn fall from the sky, instead of knocking them clean out, it just harmlessly falls from the tip of their hat to the side and onto the floor. So they're protective gear.
For acorns?
Yes. Or other falling objects.
Okay. Acorns are their kryptonite, the only thing that can kill them. But
maybe.
They guard homes and barns from misfortune, for the most part. But these little ones have different appearances than you think in some places. In Denmark, they don't really have beards, preferring that clean-shaven look and a more demure red and gray. In Norway, they have four fingers, pointed ears like elves, and eyes that glow like a cat. But no matter their appearance, these guardians of the garden bring gifts to the door. People respond by leaving a small bowl of porridge in an act of gratitude, a small token of thanks for not only protecting them in their homes, but also for giving them gifts. I have to say, this is a far preferable home insurance policy than we have here in the States.
Oh, yeah, ADT. What are you going to do?
Yeah, I mean, I would like my home to be protected for free and given gifts. Mm-hmm. But, alas. Now, remember how I said Befana had to share the skies with Santa nowadays? Well, parts of Italy also celebrate a different Santa. Santa Lucia. But this Santa is mainly Nordic, actually.
In Sweden, and it's celebrated in Italy?
Some parts, mainly Northern Italy.
Oh.
Yeah. In Sweden and some parts of Norway, on December 13th, it's not midsummer, but that's what I picture. Youngins dress up in white gowns with red sashes and crowns of burning candles. I feel like Midsummer the movie really made me think of such a thing as very devilish, but it's one of the sweeter holiday traditions and probably quite beautiful. Mm-hmm. As the winter solstice approaches, these folks all dressed up in their gowns carry palm fronds, cookies, and other treats as they sing songs about surviving the winter. Remember, in Scandinavia, the winter sun is sparse, and in parts of the region, there's no sun at all beyond a haze for an hour or two. So they dance, they sing, they hope to survive the winter and get as much light as they can. Others, traditionally boys, dress like wizards with conical hats painted with stars. It's an astronomer's dream. And frankly, I relate heavily to having doubts about surviving the winter, a newfound feeling during the pandemic. But this culminates in a large feast that is not alone. It's full of family and friends and is supposed to actually signify togetherness, which sounds extremely nice. But what's interesting about this, to me anyway, is that Lucia is a sweet and celebrated saint, but was also Adam's first wife, aka Lilith.
Oh my god, this was the plot twist I didn't know I needed.
Yeah. Lilith, also known as the mother of all demons and the first witch. So, everybody has a dark side, as Kelly Clarkson once said. Lucia's dark side brings me to Lucy. In other parts of Norway, she's associated with the various hidden folk of the region, which many know as elves and I just talked about. But she's also associated with some other beings. While these creatures aren't necessarily nefarious, between St. Lucy's Day and Yule, which is Christmas, these creatures, like trolls, witches, and particularly evil spirits, wander around in a mirrored procession to what I just described, with the nice girls in sashes and potentially others in sashes, dependent on their gender identification and preferences. And same goes for people in conical hats with stars.
Yes.
Yes. But unlike that procession, this mirrored procession is called Luciferda. Saint Lucy, which is the same thing as Saint Lucia, is in this case called Lucy, but spelled L-U-S-S-I, a witch and demoness who leads the procession. This woman of many sides is so prolific that others in Western Sweden refuse to celebrate Saint Lucia with the rest of their comrades, seeing the saint as a hidden embodiment of Lucifer. And that's where the oh-so-sweet gets a little bit darker.
Yeah.
And much like the Nutcracker, after you fall asleep, you wake up, and the world of Christmas can get a little bit scarier.
Without darkness, there is no depth. I love how so many Christmas stories occur at night. It's a reminder that every happiness has some shadows. After all, without some darkness, how do we know what is light? I will be totally honest. My experiences with Christmas, aside from the yearly vomiting, were nothing but lovely and beautiful. As a choir singer, Christmas Mass was always gorgeous. I'd get to hit all the high notes from our beautiful choir loft. The church was always decorated with red poinsettias and flickering soft lights. But to be Catholic is to remember that earthly happiness is fleeting. After all, we celebrate the birth of Christ, only to watch him die mere months later. Plus, even Christmas has us consuming the body and blood of Christ during communion. I mean, you'd think we'd let him rest on his birthday. In true Catholic fashion, Europe has its fair of less than savory Christmas characters. I want to first talk about Father Whipper, or Père Fouettard. This man is French. The most popular iteration of his story was first told in 1150 by an innkeeper. According to legend, Père Fouettard was a butcher who came up with the bright idea of kidnapping three boys he thought were wealthy. These boys were on their way to a wealthy Catholic boarding school, hence Père Fouettard's assumption. I guess he'd never heard of scholarships. Anyway, Fouettard with his wife kidnapped the boys, slit their throats, cut them into pieces, and stewed the meat in a barrel. This was all to steal their money. While the boys were stewing, St. Nicholas was traveling around, found them, and resurrected them. As punishment for Père Fouettard's terrible actions, St. Nicholas made him become his Christmas partner. Now he is cursed to follow St. Nicholas as Dark Santa.
This sounds like a sitcom.
I know, right?
Like a gay sitcom, like, as punishment.
You become my partner.
Formed a new pairing. called Santa and the Whipper.
That does sound like a really good sitcom. I will agree with you. Anyway, Father Whipper's job is to do the disciplining. Thus, while Santa gets to give presents to good children, Father Whipper does as his name suggests. He whips naughty children. So I guess the French don't get coal in their stockings.
Well, I think he brings both. I think he throws coal at you and whips you.
So you just get, you get whipped and all you have to show for it is some coal?
Marks of coal on you.
I remember, this is going to sound so stupid, but I was in like art classes when I was a little kid, and obviously they didn't stick because I can't even draw stick figures, but we would draw with like coal, and I was like, this is the coolest thing ever, with charcoal, not with coal. And my parents were like, one year they said as a joke, you're getting coal for Christmas, and I was like, it's okay, I can use it for my art. And it's just, I think about this a lot. I'm just like, yeah. Wow, you were so dumb. Anyway, I have
gotten coal before. My parents quite literally bought coal for me, along with presents, once.
Yeah. All right. Well, today's iteration of Father Whipper wears dark clothes, has a scraggly beard, carries switches for whipping, and wears a basket on his back. A basket that is the perfect size for kidnapping children. I know, isn't that sweet? So, an offshoot of the French Père Foutard is the Dutch Zwart Piet, or Black Peter. And yes, it is as bad as it sounds. In blackface, whoever depicting Black Peter acts as the bad cop to St. Nicholas's good cop. In an extra yikes, they are supposed to represent a demon that St. Nicholas tamed. I'm mentioning this because it is scary to me that the modern era has such blatant and somewhat accepted use of blackface. Yes, but turning from that scene, I'd also like to alert you of Germany's Frau Perchta, Krampus's lesser known but just as scary gal pal. An old crone who wears rags, has a beak made of iron, may or may not carry a cane, but always has a knife stashed under her raggedy skirt. Frau Perchta was likely based off of a pagan goddess of light, but once paganism was no longer kosher, our Frau became an ugly crone. Frau Perchta, a variation of Bertha, travels on the night of the Epiphany along with a bevy of the ghosts of unbaptized souls. She asks for a helping of porridge to be set aside for her. Without it, she might find you and stomp on you.
I wonder if she's ever crossed in the night sky with Befana.
Do you think that maybe they like crossed paths and Befana just like shakes her head knowingly, but they still wave to each other like politely?
They're both old women. One has a giant beak and carries a knife, and the other carries presents.
Yeah, so she's just like, oh, you silly goose, and she just flies off to see the children in Italy. And then Frau just goes to see the kids in Germany.
Because poor German children.
I know, right? No wonder they're so filled with anger. But the scariest thing about Frau, and my favorite thing about her, is the fact that she goes around and slits the bellies of naughty children.
Oh my God.
Once disemboweled, she replaces the children's innards with rocks and straw. However, if you are good, she will leave you a solitary silver coin. There is nothing merrier than that.
How efficient. German efficiency at its finest.
Pretty exciting. Anyway, though, on that note, something that I found confusing about Christmas is the fact that we celebrate it in December when our boy Christ the Savior was born in the spring or summer. Granted, this was due to the fact that Christians were forcing pagans to convert, and what better way to bribe them into doing it than by taking their solstice holiday and repurposing it for the Lord? That is, after all, why we have Tannenbaums.
On a I love side the Royal note, Tannenbaums. One of the I best Wes Anderson movie. Films.
Oh, man. On a side note, though, there was also a lot of murdering of pagans. Somehow, I think that was the bigger draw for conversion. In Nordic traditions, there is a Yule goat. This fellow started out as a pagan celebration, either for Thor, who rode the skies in a chariot pulled by goats, or for the god Devok, the god of fertile sun and the harvest, who was represented by, you guessed it, a goat.
Bah.
As time passed and Christianity disseminated, the Yule goat began to represent more Christmassy things. For instance, a man dressed as a goat would be led about by a man dressed as Saint Nicholas, representing Saint Nicholas's control over the devil. Other places saw the Yule goat as a spirit who would travel the lands close to Christmas in order to assure that Christmas preparations were being done correctly. In Sweden, in a town called Gauv, There is a goat called the Golf Goat, who is a giant goat made of straw and placed in the town square. This goat is erected every year on the first day of Advent and has been since 1966. Hilariously, the goat has been burned down by arsonists almost every year, despite the fact that it is protected by the nearby fire station. Today, burning down the goat is punishable by death. I'm kidding. I'm kidding. It's just jail time.
But still. Anyway,
no, I know, right? It's a felony. You get thrown in jail for a couple months. Anyway, this fiercely protected goat has perished 36 times since its inauguration in the 60s. And that's, like, also keeping in mind that it had a 10-year hiatus somewhere in there. So, like, that's 36 years out of, like, not many. Anyway,
this goat comes back more than a 90s trend.
I know, right? But while I thought nothing could be stranger and funnier than the Golf Goat, I was pleased to find a tradition even stranger. Mairwind. This is a wassailing custom done in Wales, where around Christmas and New Year's, people travel about singing to gain entry into others' houses. In this particular wassail, there is a person who holds a horse's skull on a pole and covers the back of the pole and their entire selves with a long sheet. This creates the illusion of a sentient horse skull just strolling about at night. This horse person travels with their friends dressed as stock characters such as Punch and Judy from the very popular British puppet shows. Together, they knock on doors asking for entry via song. Those they are entreating, yeah, I know, right? They sing, please let me in the house. Anyway, those they are entreating for entry answer why they might not enter in song as well. This continues until one side gives up. If it is the homeowners, Mairwind is granted entry and given food and drink in these poor homeowners' homes.
Wow. Also, yeah. Like, to be fair, this is weird, but it's kinder than, like, say, Santa or someone, or I guess Father Whipper, just entering your house without permission.
Mm-hmm.
At least these people are asking for permission to enter your home.
That's true. It sort of reminds me of vampires, where they have to, like, be granted permission to be able to enter your home.
Yes.
So, like, yes, horse skull, please do come in. but while this is all very strange, the funniest thing to me is the scholarly dispute surrounding the name Mairwind. A camp of scholars believe this tradition was to honor Mother Mary, taking the name to mean Holy Mary. However, other scholars believe this is part of a pagan tradition and that Mairwind means white mare, thereby explaining the skeletal horse head. I obviously think one side is correct, and I would say it is not the one that thinks it's about Mother Mary.
What other one's left?
I think it's definitely white mare, and I think this is definitely pagan, because only the pagans knew how to have a good time.
Oh, that's a confrontational statement.
Well, that's true. It is very confrontational from your friendly neighborhood Catholic girl. But while we are in the midst of festivities, it's cool to think about how so many of Christmas's celebrations begin with pagan traditions. The shadows of winter and darkness can seem all-encompassing, talking about seasonal affective disorder right now, but spring and the warmth of life that come with it are just around the corner. After all, while the solstice celebrates the shortest day, it also marks the beginning of the return of light. Christmas time is lovely and awful and strange all at once. The holidays themselves, however, are a time to remember what is most important. Goats and arson.
If this weren't a pandemic, you know where I'd be right now, burning down a goat.
So from both of us here at Not So Familiar History, we wish you a happy holidays. We thank you for listening, and we hope you were good this year. Otherwise, you may be disemboweled by a crone.
Well, let's hope it doesn't come to that. I would rather become friends with La Befana, a hag of my own heart.
Of all the people, if we're befriending people in this, I would definitely befriend Mairwind. I think that one is the most worthy of my friendship.
Anyway. Thank you for listening to our special holiday episode that is coming out today on Christmas. Although we hope you enjoyed it no matter what holidays you choose to celebrate or not celebrate.
Yes, we don't tell you what to do.
Yep, per usual. But please make sure to listen to our podcast on whatever platform you prefer and to rate us on whatever platform you prefer. Specifically, I guess, Apple Podcasts, because that has the most extensive rating system. But do you?
Do you?
Thanks so much, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.